Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Coleman, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Clempire with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hey.
Hey.
What's going on?
Oh, not too much, man. It's been a while, few weeks of you've been gone.
I've been busy, man.
Been busy, I know. You've been doing mayor stuff, running for mayor.
Running for mayor stuff.
So how's that all going?
Work, my job.
Right, right. School is back. You got a million kids with textbooks they need.
Yes, I got
Everybody needs something from you.
Everybody wants something, you know?
They don't have anything for you.
They got nothing for me. But see, that's part of my campaign, though. It's ask not what the city can do for you. Ask what you can do for me.
Okay. it's got a ring to it. I like that.
That's what I'm all about.
Okay. Well, is anybody?
If this city doesn't get it right this time around, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, I'm done.
Yeah, you're cashing in your chips.
Yeah, and speaking of our mayor's indicted.
Yes.
That was big news in the last couple of weeks.
That was big news.
She's got indicted, and she's going to plea on September 11th, I think, is her plea.
Oh, 10th. Yeah. Yeah,
10th
yeah.
Or 11th.
Somewhere
she's,
around there.
It's her day in court, and we'll see what if she's already made a deal. You know.
Huh. Well, I can't see her making a deal. You know, if she was going to make a deal, she's had all that time to do that before the indictments came out.
But will those two guys, her lover, turn on her?
That's a good question. Will Officer Vappy think you know, better get while the getting's good? And
right.
You know,
I didn't know LaToya's husband had died. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was over a year ago.
Oh, really?
But while this was
he
all
died
going,
of embarrassment.
Right.
What the fuck is going on?
I know. While all this was had already been going on, he
just dropped dead.
Yeah.
He was in the overhead bin on an airplane. She was taking a trip.
Well, somebody was saying, I hope they did an autopsy on him, you know,
because
who knows, you know, some of different
well,
sorts
I also
of
heard that at his funeral, she was wailing like a crazy woman. I heard that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? I could see that. You know?
She was wailing like a crazy woman, like, you know, like crazy women do, I guess. But I did not know he was dead.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's got what? Her last day in office officially, I think, will be January 10th.
That sounds about right.
10th or 11th or something like that. Right. And we'll see what happens in the next few months.
You'll be taking over the 11th. January
I'll be taking
11th.
Over the 11th.
Right, okay.
And my first thing I'm going to do is take a trip.
Okay.
Because I hear that's what you do.
Right.
You take trips. You go and spread the good word around.
Uh-huh. Go visit some sister cities of New Orleans.
Yeah, brother cities.
Sure, cousins.
Cities,
yeah.
Hooker cities right. of New Orleans. You know, shitty cities.
Start a sister city with Las Vegas. So
right.
Go back and shuttle back and forth between
Paris
and
is one of our sisters.
We have all kinds. We have way too many. It's you know, it's like I think Liverpool is in there somewhere.
Really?
Yeah.
How many sisters do we need?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. No, we got a lot of them. Probably like you know some weird ones too. Yeah. Abu Dhabi or something. I don't know.
And she had to go see all of them.
Right. Yeah. I got to go.
Because the sisters are doing it for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
They're doing it for themselves. But, you know, thinking, you know, I've been campaigning and going to some forums and stuff, and a lot of these, the same subjects keep coming up, as they do every election year. And one that came up, which I thought was a new one, and it has to do with crime and stuff, but is this facial recognition stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's getting big.
That's a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about it, because I was... It was like seven or eight of us, and I had a few moments to think about it before it was my turn to answer it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this is what I feel. This is what I said. I said, facial recognition will not stop crime or save lives. It will only force serial killers to work from home.
Okay.
And it'll also make It'll make priests stop enjoying decadence fests.
Okay. You're going to have to reel it back in.
Yeah. So that's what I thought. And when I said that, I got no reaction except blank faces from people.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you could have said something like, you know, facial recognition. It would help me recognize all you people. I don't know who the fuck you people are.
How'd you get in my living room?
Where'd you come from? Well, yeah, so you've been around all these people in person, or I don't know how much pressing of the flesh is going on at these forums, if there's any fellowship between the candidates.
Well, I've been going to all the forums for the losers.
Right, right.
The loser forums, mm-hmm. where the top three won't even bother going to.
Right. Well, that's it. Now, when you first were running for mayor, you know, 20 years ago, the initial debates or forums, you'd have everybody there, right?
Yes, yes. And now it's all about the money talks now.
Well, I think they're trying to keep you away from the top candidates.
Maybe that's true.
This is in the Manny Chevrolet era that they have instituted this.
Well, they always say that it's all about the polling. Who's polling the best?
Right.
Because you got to remember, like a year like this year, is there's 15 candidates or something. So they've got to rent out a bigger hall. They've got to get more microphones. They've got to get more people. So it's all about money in that way. So that's why they always say, they always want the top three or top five people who are polling. That's their reason.
Right.
You know, but it could be they just don't want you there.
Yeah.
You know,
they don't want all the foolishness.
Yeah, they don't want me, going to the craft service table and filling my pockets up. You know? Yeah.
Well, so you've been around some of these other lower tier candidates. You've been around Frank Scurlock, I imagine.
Yes.
But you just fist bumped him, right?
Decided not to shake hands. I kind of did the elbow thing.
Okay, right.
Just an elbow thing. I was so wanted to bring up that issue that he had, you know, 8 years ago, but I didn't. I didn't want to embarrass. You know who he reminds me of?
Hmm.
He reminds me of one of those. I see them all the time at my job on campus. He reminds me of one of those like fat frat boys who is always like. Has his shirt untucked.
Right. Kind of a Chris Farley type, almost.
Yeah, he's kind of a Chris Farley type. Yeah,
I know what you mean.
But you know what? He's having, for his birthday next month, he's having a huge toga party.
Oh, huh, okay.
I'm invited.
You're invited. All right. Invited. Well, you must have,
Well, he was inviting everyone. I guess he doesn't have any friends.
Yeah.
He was inviting all the candidates and their wives.
Well, maybe that's
friends.
Why he's running, you know, just to make some friends. Expand his horizons.
I guess so. But yeah, he does remind me very much of a Chris Farley kind of guy. Who, just like you look at him and you wonder who's driving.
Sure.
You know, that kind of thing. But he seems like a good guy. And the other candidates...
Now, the other one I have a question about is Ricky Twiggs.
Ricky Twiggs.
Is he a real boy? Has he turned out to be a real boy?
He's a real person.
Okay.
Yes. He's a very well-dressed person.
Okay.
He's got an organization. He's got a manager. He's got a web designer. He's got the whole nine yards for his campaign.
Okay.
What he doesn't have are the votes.
Yeah.
Or the money. But he's running on... Basically, he's running on one platform, like a lot of these candidates do sometimes.
Uh-huh.
You know, like the kid Jonah who got the wheelchair access for the streetcars.
Right,
cars
right.
And stuff. He's basically... His main issue, and it's a good issue...
Mm-hmm.
Is New Orleans has had like over $500 million that they got from Katrina, and they've yet to spend it.
Right.
Why?
Yeah.
Why haven't you spent this money?
Excellent point.
And it's been
since
Landrieu. It's been now Cottrell. And why haven't you spent this money to fix our streets? You know, all this kind of stuff. And that's his big issue.
Yeah.
And he basically couldn't really answer any other question except that question, you know.
Okay.
On how to infrastructure and all that.
Right.
It's like, you know, we've got like, you know, $500 million just sitting there, you know.
And
you
they say, we don't have the personnel. It's like, hire people, expand these departments.
Yeah. And stop giving...
Let the contracts.
Yeah, well, stop giving contracts to the good old boys who basically tear up the street and they leave for a year.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. But yeah, he's quite a character. He very well dressed, very well groomed.
Okay.
He's like a, I think he's like a psych major or something.
I think he might work for the rehab place or something. He's a counselor of some type or a consultant, right. Or, you know,
and
these people that doesn't get their hands dirty.
Yeah, exactly. He's one of those kind of guys, but he seems like a good guy. And but Twigs, yeah, I'll probably see him again.
Twiggy likes to be called, I understand. I don't know, maybe not.
He was one of those guys who wore those really, really thin pants.
Uh-huh.
You know, and those hipster shoes kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think he's from here. I have no idea, but...
okay.
The one who was very funny was this one lady. I forget her name now. There's two women on the panel. But the first form I did with her, and she, you know, just like, you know, there's everyone sitting on a panel kind of thing. And she put out two pink boxing gloves in front of her microphone.
Props.
Yeah, it was just, she brought out props. It was two pink boxing gloves. Like, you know, she's ready. She's ready for the fight.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing.
Did she ever address the boxing gloves? Did anyone ever ask her about the boxing gloves?
In the closing remarks, I did. I said, I just want to thank, you know, the forum here and blah, 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 blah. And I just said, what's with the gloves? What's the gloves? Right. No one's here to hurt you. We're all here to, you know, get along. That kind of
thing. Did she ever answer the boxing gloves question?
Yeah, she was like, what? Something like that.
Okay.
I don't know. She's just like, what are you making fun of my gloves for? That
okay,
kind of thing.
All right.
It was like, calm down.
She was looking for a confrontation.
Yeah, maybe she was. Yeah, yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Feel free to butt in.
You know. No, he's picking his spots here, I think.
Yeah. I'm waiting for my lawn sign.
All right.
I want to see my lawn sign, brother.
Okay.
I'm in your camp.
They're Manny
coming.
Chevrolet for mayor lawn sign.
Yeah.
All right.
Coming, all right.
We
what else has been going on with you since?
What else has been going on? Playing jobs. It's actually kind of a little bit of a slow time here, but got a full weekend here coming up. Playing with Ed Volker and Dave Easley, and the Iguanas are continuing our residency over at the Carousel Bar, Hotel Motleon, and picked up a gig with the great Little Freddie King last weekend, which is
now how small is Freddie King?
He's about your size, I would say.
really?
You know, he's a full adult
and what
size.
What does he play?
He's a guitar player, singer, great electric country blues man.
Oh.
And actually, our guest here is his drummer and manager and lifelong friend for the past 30-something years. We're going to get into all that.
You've been ripping him off for years, haven't you?
It's been keeping him up.
I've been keeping him straight up, standing straight up, brother.
You've been squeezing that lemon.
36 years. I think he's 5'4".
I'm taller than that.
There you go.
Okay.
Oh,
see.
You beat him by 2 inches?
Three.
Three, all right. So, yes, he is little.
I just pulled out enough to win.
Okay.
Hey, we're talking hide or penises here.
Hey, you know what? We could put a lawn sign on Freddie's yard, too.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. We've had a lot of different people drop into the Iguanas Carousel Bar gig. One of them, one night, we had Jimmy Anselmo, former guest, you know, proprietor of Jimmy's. Another former guest, Steve Lowry. And then a third former guest, Sidney Smith, came in.
Oh.
And they were all old friends, and they hung around, watched a couple of sets of the Iguanas. But I got to talk to Sidney briefly. Now, Sidney's been in the news a bunch. Have you seen that?
I heard about it. I haven't really had time to watch it.
Right, right. So, you know, Sidney had a suit against the coroner's office for having, you know, misplaced his not being able to identify his son. For months. Yeah. And so he actually had a successful suit against the coroner's office. And then... for like punitive damages or emotional distress or something, you know, and just to admit fault. That's what he's wanted to set a precedent so that this doesn't happen with somebody else's family member.
Right.
But then he dislikes the coroner so much, he went and filed another suit, which is like to have an injunction to, because, you know, Sidney is ill, has some kind of thing. It's, you know, thinks he may not make the year, but he doesn't want the coroner to be able to handle his remains.
Oh.
So he got like a, you know, like a stay away order from my from my body.
Yeah,
so,
stay away from my dead body.
So they're gonna have to have another coroner come in and
get that guy who's wanted in Arizona, who's now working in the North Shore. That young coroner who won.
Oh, okay.
What's
I don't
guy?
Know about that.
Oh yeah.
Well, they may get him. He's right over there on the North Shore. I don't know. Maybe they'll get some by from Jefferson Parish.
No, it was a guy who won the election on the North Shore, but he was a coroner in Arizona. He moved, and he lost his license, but yet he won the election on the North Shore.
Okay,
without a license. So maybe they can get him. I forget his name.
All right.
I don't know.
Yeah, he might be might
well,
be
good
free.
For Sydney. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
He's
yeah. Sydney's he's going down fighting, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I hope that's good. Yeah. Why not? Don't fucking touch me, you fucking bastard
right,
corner.
Right.
Whatever his name is. I don't know what his name is.
Yeah. But shout out to Sydney Smith.
Yeah.
He's,
well, at least he's going out. I thought he was really ill where he couldn't leave the house.
You know, I think he has good days and bad days.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Speaking of good days and bad days, did you hear, I'm sure you've seen pictures of them in your lifetime, Courtney and Brittany Hansel, those conjoined twins, they're conjoined at the head.
I think I've seen them. Yeah. They must be all grown up now, huh?
Yeah, well, they got married. The two of them got married to some guy, and they had a baby.
Huh.
They had a baby. Who will be having a lifetime of problems, I'm sure.
Man. It's a complicated situation, I'm
but
sure.
I was thinking about this. So this guy married both of them.
Did he?
Well,
he can't really do that. I mean, that's polygamy.
It could be Mormon. I don't know.
Well, but, even that's
I saw a picture of them together, and so I'm thinking to myself, which one did he impregnate?
Well, it must be the one that he married.
Well, I don't know that.
Because they have two different bodies. It's just they're connected. You know, they don't share like a torso or anything. Like some.
Well, yeah,
some twins
but it's
do.
Also the best of both worlds for him because they're twins.
Is it? Is it the best of both worlds?
Well, yeah, because let's say he gets in a fight with one, he still has the other to bang if he wants to bang the other one.
Yeah, but he's got to listen to both of them.
Yeah, but. So. I think that's a great deal.
They got him coming and going, man.
Well, yeah, but I just, because I'm sure they're both in love with him.
Are they?
I don't know.
I don't
conjoined
know.
Twins.
You might hate one of them.
But I mean, he's got to be a freak.
Well,
you know,
that's
the thing.
A special kind of man. Yeah.
You know, what if the lights are out and he just pops the wrong hole? And it's like, oh, I thought that was you, honey. It's, no, it's me. You know? Crazy, man.
Yeah, I don't know. It's above my pay grade.
What does that mean?
It's something I'm not familiar with, that kind of situation. I can't even imagine
I mean, they've got to be really tight, those two sisters.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
To watch your other sister get banged by some guy, and you're thinking to yourself, damn, what about me? When am I going to find a guy? And then what if she finds a guy, the other one?
Right.
So are they all going to be like Bob and Carol, Ted and Alice in bed?
That's quite an image there, yeah.
You know? Now, could
timely
they...
reference.
What happens if the one that's married to the guy, the other one marries conjoined male twins?
Okay.
We're talking fucking freak city, man.
Yeah. It's the odds are really stacked against that something like that happens.
I think they should run for mayor.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
I'd vote for them.
Okay.
You know.
To come establish residency. Well, maybe we should get our guest in here.
Sure.
Huh? I'm ready.
Been patient. Yeah.
I'm ready.
Right on.
Interesting conversation.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Well, we have a terrific guest. He's a fantastic drummer, record producer, songwriter, founder of Made Right Records. He's played with Electric Country Blues Man, Little Freddie King for over 30 years and managed his career since 1993. And he's produced all Freddie's records since the 2000s, including the latest 2025's I Used to Be Down record. Terrific record here. We're going to get into all that. He's played New Orleans his whole life, get into all that and much more. But without further ado, the great Mr. Wacko Wade. Welcome, Wacko.
Thank you, Rene. Great to be here. I'm honored. to be on your show.
Oh,
I'm honored to meet the future mayor of New Orleans.
Future mayor of New Orleans, that's right.
It's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing. Now, Wacko, I've wondered this. I haven't known you a whole long time, but I feel like we have a certain chemistry, certain kindred spirit kind of thing. How did you get the name Wacko?
Oh, the Wacko developed a while back just because of the drumming.
Oh, okay. Based on your drum style?
When I was younger, I had a little strength, you know.
Because you'd whack the drums.
I could knock the shit out of them.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. Okay.
As I got older, that kind of decreased, but they still call me Wacko.
So it didn't have anything to do with you being wacky?
The mentality was combined with the power.
Okay, right.
The mentality was I was half Wacko and the drums were the other whack.
Okay. I like it.
But it stuck with me, so that's why I made a corporation called Wacko Wade Production, which handles all the music business for Lil Freddie King.
Nice.
You know, so that's the way we roll, dude.
Right. You got it all in-house. You don't have to worry about anybody pulling something fast on y'all or on Freddie and doing
Renee,
it wrong.
Renee, you experienced in the business. You understand how it works when I first got in the business. And you'd go to these people, you know, and ask for help and all, and they'd rob you.
Right.
They'd rob you, man.
Sure. They don't think anything of it.
No, man, without the gun. They don't have bullets in a gun, but they rob you.
Yep.
So when I met Freddie, and I learned of all the royalties and the songs he'd written, and he's never got, you know, two nickels to rub together.
Uh-huh.
And so Freddie didn't kind of trust, you know, the Caucasian dude anymore.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I promised him, I said, look, we're going to have a 360-degree partnership.
Okay.
Me and you are going to own everything. 50-50. Is that okay? We make a dollar, I get 50 cents, you get 50 cents. And so that's the partnership we went into 36 years ago.
Nice.
And so I started filing his publishing, you know, songwriting with BMI. I got him registered into BMI.
Right.
His original record company didn't even care about registering him.
Oh, man.
The original record company just wanted to record and get the disc out and start selling.
Uh-huh.
Nothing about the artist.
Publishing, nothing.
You got to have your own manager, dude.
Right.
Your manager's got to do that for you.
Oh, jeez.
Now, here's Freddie. Freddie don't know.
Sure.
You know, but that's how I got started. But we're on equal terms, and we split everything.
Nice.
He lets me handle the business for his bookings, and I say, dude, it's called show business.
Right.
And you the show, okay? I'm the business.
Right.
Show business. And so that's the way we roll.
Nice.
And we've been doing it a long time. And we short in the tooth now. I mean, I'm 81 years old. He's 85 years old.
Okay.
So we waning down. We losing power, but we still like playing our music.
Yeah, man.
And lo and behold, people still like to come and shake their booty to Freddie.
Yeah, man. Yeah, people love the band.
It's a booty shaker, dude.
And look, chicks dig little Freddie King, man. The chicks come, and I guess they figure, oh, you know, he's safe. I can flirt with him. He's not gonna come feel me up. He's a gentleman, you know.
You have it, brother.
So
the thing is, oh, he's so cute.
Right, right.
I said, well, what about the fucking drummer, dude?
You're cute too.
We were in Paris one time doing a gig at the JVC Theater, and a big crowd there. And we finished playing. We go to the dressing room, and man, we were sweating bullets, drinking beers. And then I get a knock on the door, and the guard said, "Man, look, they got a line of chicks out here. Want to meet y'all?"
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Oh, dude, let them in one at a time." So the guard lets them in one at a time, and they went to Freddie. Went to Freddie. All of a sudden, Freddie had like eight broads talking to Freddie. And I'm sitting over there. I said, "Freddie, could you please send a couple over here, dude?"
Give me a couple of cast-offs.
How long ago was this, or was this just recently?
No, this was a while ago.
Oh, okay.
We've been overseas, man. We've been to 18 countries, you know, 150 cities. I mean, we used to roll when we was in 30, 40s, you know?
Yeah.
But at 80, dude, hell with it.
Yeah.
They got to come see us, dude.
Right. Yeah. We got to make a house call.
You're rolling a different way now.
You got to come to the Night Ward to see the King now.
Right, right.
I've never seen Freddie King.
Long live the King, dude.
Oh, right. It's terrific.
If you want, Bywater vote, you got to come to BJ's, and I'll put you on stage. I'll introduce you. This is the next mayor of the city of New Orleans. There he is, dude.
I don't really,
Chevrolet man's here.
That's right. Well, Wacko, let's go back a little bit and talk about your early life here. So I know already, and I can also tell by your accent that you are from New Orleans.
Got to have concrete under my feet, brother.
Right on. That's how me and Manny are, too. We don't like the dirt. We don't like the trees.
I don't know. It's pretty dirty out there.
Well, yeah. Oh, we don't like that. So so what neighborhood did you grow up in?
I grew up in the Mid-City.
Okay.
Mid-City, Alexander Street, Canal Street, by City Park.
Oh, right on.
Orleans Avenue up in there.
Okay, well, yeah, that's my old neighborhood where I had my first
house. Used to walk to the park as a kid and, play in the park, City Park and stuff. Right. That's when they had the canal. Orleans Avenue was a canal. It was a drainage canal back in the day.
Okay.
And each side of the roads was shell. It was the white clamshell roads.
No kidding.
It wasn't paved or nothing. And we'd play in that canal. But that's where I grew up.
This is like the 40s.
No, this is the 50s.
Okay.
55.
Oh, right on. So, and you went to elementary school in that neighborhood?
I went to John Dibert, which is on Orleans Avenue.
Dibert, yeah.
Until I was in the second grade and they threw me out, dude.
Really? Why is that?
They locked me in a closet and my mother got mad that they locked me in a closet.
Well, why would they do that?
Well, I was bad, dude.
Oh.
I was starting my Wacko series, you know?
Oh, really?
So when did you come out of the closet?
When my mother came and got me, said, I'm taking you out of the school.
Okay.
And so she said, I'll fix your ass now. So we walked to the streetcar, Canal Street, 7 cents to get the streetcar. We went to Sacred Heart of Jesus on Canal Street.
Uh-huh.
And we walked into the whatever it is, and had these ladies in there with these hoods and these white chest protectors on. And she said, this is where you're going. And so I enrolled the Sacred Heart of Jesus.
Okay. Well, you were Catholic already, I'm imagining, huh?
Well, yeah, I was a Catholic. I went to St. Anthony of Padua. I walked there on Sunday. But, yeah.
So were those nuns in the full habit, you're
saying?
They
straightened me out, dude.
They straightened, yeah.
She said, do whatever you got to do to this sucker. Straighten him out.
Oh, gosh.
So they bust your knuckles and pop you in the ear and twist your ear and stuff back then. They could manhandle you back then.
Oh, sure.
Those beautiful things.
So were you starting to play drums in elementary school?
I joined Sacred Heart Band as a kid, eighth grade. I'm beating on a snare drum, marching in the parade, and I played a snare drum, and I got kind of hung on it.
Okay.
And then my mother took me to World Lines on Canal Street, and we went in the music store, and they had the drum sets there. And my mother talked to this man. His name was what was his name?
Al Dorian.
How you knew that, dude?
Because I do my research.
Okay, dude. I couldn't remember the name. She talked to Al Dorian, and he was a very good jazz drummer, very good. Reads charts and all. And so my mother asked him if he taught drums. He said, yeah. And he actually goes to your house. He'll drive to your house and sit down in the dining room with you and put the newspaper on the table and give you drumsticks, and start teaching you your paradiddles and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I took lessons for him for a while, and then I got onto the set as I got a little older,
Okay.
And so I started playing like in 1959 when I entered high school, my freshman year in high school. That's when I really started playing and started making money.
Started playing in bands?
Yeah, I started making $5 and all the crabs you could eat.
Okay.
And
what kind of music were y'all playing? Like New Orleans R&B?
We
doo-wop or everything?
Every brother in New Orleans that made a 45 record, we copied a song.
Yeah.
We played them all, man. Whether Jesse Hill or, Ernie, whoever it was, Johnny Adams, whatever they come out with, these cats, we would copy it.
Right.
So we were a white R&B band.
Right.
Rhythm and blues, And that was the first band I was in, the Night Owls.
Oh, the Night Owls, right.
Yeah,
right.
We played a lot. Sidney Snow was my bass player.
Okay.
Sidney, and then Jimmy Hutchison played sax, and Jimmy went on to form bands down the years in the 80s called the Hutch Brothers.
Hmm.
They were a big band in the city that played dances, and Glenn May played guitar. Glenn was a good guitar player. But anyway, that's where I started with the Night Owls, and then I started rolling after that, too.
Right. So, well, and where'd you wind up going to high school?
I went to St. Aloysius High School.
St. Aloysius. So that was a very prestigious school at that time.
It was hard to get in. Yeah, I was lucky I made it. I applied for Jesuit, and they didn't let me in, so I went to Aloysius.
Now, were you in the music program at St. Aloysius?
No, I was not.
Okay.
I was more of an athletic guy. You know, I played basketball, baseball, and ran track.
Because I know so many...
They had a great band.
I know so many great musicians that came out of St. Aloysius, man.
This is what happened. When I got into Aloysius in 59, 60, the band wasn't too much. Toka was the band leader, this guy named Toka.
Okay.
But I think in my junior year, then they started a jazz group, a jazz band, you know, and they used to do international competition with this jazz group. And then as I got out of school... Johnny Vodakovich was 5 years behind me.
Okay.
I mean...
Because he went to St. Aloysius.
Johnny got out of St. Aloysius, but I was way ahead of him by 5 years, you know. But Johnny got into that jazz group, that band, and they won international competition for the jazz group. And that's when it really started. That band became like every kid wanted to be a drummer, wanted to go to Aloysius.
Okay.
Like you Stan Moore and whoever they, you know. They got a bunch of drummers that come out of Aloysius.
Yeah. No, but horn players too, man. I knew guys I played with when I was coming up. They were older than me, but then they had all gone to that school.
Is that still around, that school?
No. It was on Rampart Street, is that
they
right?
They put it to rest. It was Esplanade and Rampart at the corner there. They put some apartment complexes there.
Yeah, it closed, what, in the 70s
or
something?
They called it. They moved to Coryezu.
Okay.
Franklin Avenue. Legion Fields. Then they changed it to Brother Martin, and then they changed it to this. But the thing is, they left the history of Aloysius in the dumpster.
They threw
all the stuff in the dumpster, and they got this Brother Martin, you know. And they send me letters every month to send them money. I said, bullshit.
So Brother Martin approaches you to send money?
They want me to send money.
You never went to Brother Martin.
I said, where's all our stuff? We got 100 years tradition. Where is it, dude?
Right. They just threw it away.
Nah, dude. They got the word. They can make a lot more money if they'd put our stuff on the wall now, our trophies and our banners from Aloysius.
Okay, so they pulled them out of the closet now?
Yep.
Okay. Well,
boy, that closet keeps coming out.
I know.
They're raring to go now.
Right.
Sorry,
it's like City Hall, all those records they found at the dump.
Holy cow.
Can you believe that?
Oh,
what's
man,
that?
I can totally believe it.
Let me say this. I badmouth them, but look, let me say this. It's a good school.
Yeah.
I take it back. It's a good school. You can send your kid there if you want to. A lot of my graduate brothers sent their kids and their grandkids there. It's a good school.
Sure.
But, you know, I'm kind of got a little hard on about it. You know?
Right.
You just ain't sending them any money.
That's it, brother.
That's it. Fuck them.
You got a chip on your shoulder because they...
Look, don't
they
forget it. You will. You can leave Brother Martin a few bucks. I said,
you got to leave me a few bucks.
So you get in the Night Owls, and you guys start playing out. This is like the early 60s, 1960 or something like that?
Yeah, it was the early 60s, yeah.
So what kind of places are you all playing?
Back in the 60s and all the early 60s, it was the weekends were dance night. Mm. You know, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday were dance nights for the high schools.
Uh-huh.
It was called the Teenage Dances.
Right.
And like a Sacred Heart on Canal Street, they had a Saturday night dance, and you buy a ticket. And they punch your ticket for the month it is. And so the bands like, you know, the Contours, the Jokers, the Night Owls used to rotate and play these dances. Then St. Anthony had dances on Sunday night.
Okay.
You know, and that's where the Jokers used to play there.
It was segregated, totally segregated?
Yes, it was, back in the day.
Right.
Because segregation come to 63, so I'm talking 60, 61, 62, you know. So it was like a, you know, white kids dance hall. But the bands all picked up the R&B sound.
Sure, because that's what everybody wanted to dance to.
Now, the unusual thing was like they opened a place called Germania Hall.
Right.
You know, on Bienville Street. And it was a small place. And that was the only place where the black artists used to come.
Okay.
And they would be the headliner, they'd make posters and put the headliner. Jesse Hill's coming, you know, Friday. You got to play with Night Owls.
Okay, so you would back up the...
We'd back up the headline artists that made these 45s. See, Cosmo used to record them in... Alan Tuesday and Cosmo would record these dudes and give them boxes of 45s.
As payment. Yeah, yeah.
Go out there and sell them, dude.
Right.
So they would come to us and they put the... And they'd sell them for like, you know, $4 or $3 a record.
Okay.
And they make some good change. But we backed all those orders, you know.
Yeah, man, that Germania Hall. I was telling you, that's across the street from my first house on Bienville.
That's what you told me. Yeah. Then they had one out in, it's called Woman of the World Hall, W-O-W Hall. That was out on St. Bernard Avenue up in there. But they had a lot of good dancers back in the day. But then the Night Owls, we got sophisticated, and we started playing ballrooms.
Uh-huh.
So the first place we hit was... Magazine Street, Mary's Tavern.
Now that's a place my father talks about playing my father just turned 85, so he's Freddie's age.
Yeah.
So he's a little bit older than you. But my father would tell stories about playing Mary's Tavern. My father's a saxophone player. And I think he would say that the jobs were like 5 or 6 hours long.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd make like $12
yeah.
or something.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
For a six-hour job.
Yeah. And they would close up when the police wagon came.
Yeah.
You know, when the paddy wagon came, that's when the band stopped playing.
They'd play all night long.
Man, you just keep playing, dude. Mary's Tavern. And I think your boy Elvis Presley, when he used to come to New Orleans... And he played Pontchartrain Beach and stuff like that. He used to come to Mary's Tavern.
Oh, just to hang out?
Because nobody would go there.
Okay.
Because all the seamen that worked on the docks, you know, the ships, they'd walk down to Mary's Tavern to get loaded and chase the women, chase the skirts.
Right.
And Sidney tells me, we played there one night and there's Presley sitting in the corner. And I didn't know who the dude is.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was him. But Sidney Snow tells me to this day, man, you remember when Elvis used to come in there and see us? I said, well, he only came to the city maybe once. He said, well, that was the night he came to see us.
Yeah. I was reading that you had one time got called to come fill in for Huey Piano Smith's drummer.
All right. Yeah, that's a good one. My mother worked at WBOK, the black radio station in New Orleans back in the day. I think admin work or whatever. But anyway, I got a call at home from her, and she said, Okie Dokie, who was a famous disc jockey, Okie Dokie, he said that they need a drummer. And I said, well, who? She said, this guy Huey. I said, well, where's he playing? She said, I don't know, someplace on Rampart Street. I said, Rampart Street? Rampart Street was the Black Canal Street back in the 60s, early 60s and 50s. Shoeshine stands, pawn shops, clothing, So she said on Rampart, I said, holy mother, get the name of the place. Yeah, I'll be there. She said, the King's Club. Man, I put the drums in the car and I bust half down there and I get to the area. And I knew I was in, an African-American neighborhood. So I pulled up to the King's Club. And they got five dudes outside, and they look at this, you know, this snowball here, and they say, dude, where you going? I said, I think I got a gig here. I said, is Huey playing here? He said, Huey Piano Smith? Yeah, he's playing here. I said, can I talk to him? He said, yeah, come on inside, I'll take you. So I went there, and I said, hey, Huey, my name's Wade. At the time, I called myself Wade. I wasn't Wacko yet.
Okay.
I think I got Wacko after that gig. So I said, I'm your drummer. He says, oh, really? He said, you know my material? I said, no, I figured it out. I said, I got a cowbell on the bass drum. That ought to do it, huh? That ought to do it. I got a cowbell. Don't you just know it?
Right.
So anyway, I loaded the drums in, and I played the whole set with him, Carol Fan, Bobby Marchand, and Huey Piano Smith.
Oh, Bobby Marchand.
All brother club, you know.
Right, right.
And it was packed, man. And it's on a Sunday night. The brothers and the ladies go out on Sunday night.
Uh-huh.
They dress to the nines, ties, and dress to the nines, hats. And this place was packed and dressed to the nines. And here's this snowball sitting on the drums, and he's looking at me hard, you know.
Yeah.
Now, back then, I could be arrested. The police came in there. They could come and put me in jail.
Yeah.
Because I was playing in this black club.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, I kept looking left. I kept looking right. You know what I mean? I was a nervous son, bitch.
Yeah.
Before I was, dude.
But no problems.
No problem. After the gig, the guys came up to me and said, man, you did a hell of a job. Thank you.
Nice.
They gave you $12.
It might have been 10, dude.
Yeah, right.
10 was a round number.
Sure, sure, sure. Well, man, this is, I'm loving all these stories, but it seems like about that time, man.
Yeah, we need to freshen up, Wacko.
Take it away, dude.
Troubled Nation knows the drill. We'll be right back.
I used to be down. Oh, but I ain't down no more. I used to be down. Whoa, but I ain't down no more. Well, I'm down and down. Whoa, my baby, pick me up. I used to be down. Whoa, but I ain't down no more. I used to be down. But I ain't down no more. Well, when I'm down and out, whoa, my baby, pick me up. Get up in the morning, pick you someday. Tell me, baby, that you're not gonna eat. I used to be down. Whoa, but I ain't down no more. Well, when I'm down and now, whoa, my baby, pick me up.
And we're back.
Yes.
Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet.
That is me.
I am Renee Coleman.
You are.
Back with our guest, Mr. Wacko Wade. And now, Wade, I know, or Wacko, as we're calling you, I know you're new to the podcast, but all of our devoted listeners understand that this is a listener-supported operation, and we have no corporate sponsorship, and our listeners access the Venmo and PayPal links that we have in the show notes of every show, as well as the Facebook page that we use to promote it. And they buy us cocktails, they support our, you know, expenses, and sometimes they even send us mail to the bar. And we received a piece of mail to the bar a couple of weeks ago, after the show, so we didn't get to open it, but here tonight we do have it. And this is addressed Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge, attention, Troubled Men Podcast. 2612 Oak Street, New Orleans, 70118, in case any of you people are keeping score. And we open this up, and it's an old-timey, it's a postcard with a pulp novel cover on it that says Quickie.
Yeah, and baby.
The title is Quickie with
nothing
exclamation point.
Nothing wrong
point.
With Quickies.
Oh, what a gal was Quickie. So that's her name, was Quickie. By Gerald Foster, and you open it up inside, and it says it's two $20 bills taped to the inside, and one on one side says Troubled Men Podcast, keep up the awesome work. So it's $20 for our cocktails tonight.
Beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Yeah.
And then the other side says Manny for Mayor. Vote early, vote often.
There you go.
And it's a $20 to support Manny Chevrolet's campaign.
Yeah,
and
right.
Then it says, P.S., if you still have them, can you send me a bumper sticker?
Yes.
And this person, show you how, what kind of high class listeners we have. person encloses a self-addressed stamp envelope.
Thank you. So, I appreciate
so
that.
That you can, and I went ahead and put a couple of Troubleman podcast stickers
I
in there.
I hope the bumper sticker can fit in
and
there.
I'll, well, you might have to fold it maybe, or maybe you could, I don't know.
Watertown, Massachusetts?
Yes, so, Watertown. So, shout out to Mr. David Nealon.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it. And I hope you put it on your car. Because that's what it's all
the
about.
The bumper sticker. Yeah.
Put it on the car.
Right.
So, and thanks for the envelope. That's funny.
Yeah. Stamp self-addressed envelope. And also, we have some people who did use the links, use the PayPal link, going old school. That's Kevin Todd. All right, is way over there in England. Shout out to Kevin Todd. He's a longtime listener. Also, we sold a T-shirt. We have the also in those links, the show notes. We have the Trouble Men Podcast T-shirt links.
Oh.
We sold a medium T-shirt to James last week. And
thank you, James.
And also, let's see, we say
wear that shirt in the shower.
Okay.
Just and send us a picture.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Also, follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and we do have the Patreon page where we have the small handful of patrons who are supporting us week in, week out, and you can join that crew. And at some point, I may come over and mow your lawn. Let's see, rate, subscribe, and review the Trouble Men podcast wherever you're listening to this podcast. Give us 5 stars. Cost you nothing. Helps us a lot. Also, announce a couple of dates I have coming up. Tribe Nunzio, it's a big date coming up September 19th at the Broadside. Also, as I mentioned, the Iguanas are still every Sunday. We've been extended through the end of the year, every Sunday, 7 to 10 at Carousel Lounge at Hotel Monteleone. And also have a announcement, the Tav Falco record that I played on, which is a record that has all kind of crazy people on it. Jimmy Rip, Ann Magnuson, Kid Congo Powers, lots of luminaries. And I played on a song, the record's called Desire on Ice. It's coming out September 12th. And I played on the song Lady from Shanghai. I think there's a movie, Orson Welles movie called Lady from Shanghai might be based on. Anyway, I think that's enough of that. Back to our guest, the great Mr. Wacko Wade. Now, Wacko, you're playing in all these bands. Now you make it to Bourbon Street, Papa Joe's. Now, Papa Joe's was a big club at the time, and I talked to you about this to you a little bit backstage when we were playing with Little Freddy, and you were saying how you first got into Papa Joe's by subbing for Little Joe Lambert. Now, Little Joe Lambert, when I was a kid, Little Joe Lambert came in as a sub for our drummer in this wedding band that I was playing in. I was maybe 14 years old, and he was already playing with Freddie Fender. You know, he had been playing with Freddie Fender for a bunch of years. This is in, like, the late 70s at this point. On the break, he pulled me aside and he said, "Hey, look, you're young. This is a good band for you to be playing with. You get some experience playing, but you understand these guys are not serious, right?" he goes, "You know, do this for now, but realize these guys are, you know." And I was like, "Well, thank you. I appreciate it." Now, I told that story to my parents. My mother said, "That was wrong of him. He shouldn't have said that." And my father said, "No, that was really nice of him to say." My father, being the musician, was like, no, that was a solid he was doing you. But Little Joe Lambert, so that band was Freddie Fender, and Freddie Fender must have been fresh out of prison at that time, huh?
When I was playing at Papa Joe's, you know, on Bourbon Street, they had the 3 o'clock jam session. It would be like 3 to 8 in the morning when the sun came up, you know, and all the musicians would come down there, Rod Bernard, the guy, he made This You'll Go On Forever, which was a swamp pop hit. Skip Easterling. And Freddie Fender just got out of jail. I think he did 10 years
ten
at Angola.
Years.
And they let him out, and I think he walked all the way to New Orleans to get a gig.
Incredible.
But he played.
What did he do?
For like a couple of joints
smoking
or something?
Weed, man.
Yeah, like just a small amount of weed. Yeah.
Smoking weed, dude.
Had him on the fucking farm for 10 years.
It's going to be that way again soon.
Oh, Jesus.
I think they let him out early because they knew he was kind of like a musician. And, yeah. You know, he worked in New Orleans, and I think he has some political clout. Hmm. But anyway, I was playing down the street at the... let's see. No, no. Well, I was playing on the street, different places, mm-hmm. with Frogman Henry and different clubs, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they would call me and say, man, can you play drums? And it would be sit-in guys in the band, you know, and Freddie Fender used to sing. And he turned to me and he said, hey, man, he said, look, I got a couple of gigs. Would you play drums? I said, yeah, where you playing? He said, well, I got a bass player. We're going to play La Casa La Marina. And I said, what? You know, I didn't know Spanish back then.
Sure.
La Casa La Marina. What is it? The house of something marine? And it was down on Decatur Street. And it's where all the seamen and everybody had the fights. And it was a nasty street back mm-hmm. in the day. In the early
60s. Decatur? Oh, yeah, it was seedy. The corner was super seedy.
It was seedy, dude. All the babes there, and you know, hustling. It was rough. So
prostitute strolls up and down.
Oh, yeah. So he said, I got a couple of gigs. Would you play them? I said, sure. So I played Casa La Marina one night with him, and, man, a fight broke out, and, man, I hid behind the drums and shit. And I said, man, look, dude, I don't know if I want to play with you anymore. He said, well, look, I'm going to Houston, Texas. I'm getting out of New Orleans. Ain't no money here. And I said, he said, you want to come? I said, why would I want to come with you when I got three other gigs around the street and all, you know? You can't offer me any kind of security. I said, no. I said, but look, I got this dude down at the El Maraca Club. You could check him out. And little Joe Lamb was playing at the El Maraca Club with Ronnie Barron. Ronnie Barron used to play B3 organ, and he was good friends with Mac Rabinack. And
right.
He went to L.A., and they formed that... You know, the voodoo shit and all, you know.
Right, well, that was the whole beginning of Dr. John.
Yeah, like, that was
like
the beginning.
Mac was not supposed to be Dr. John.
No, Ronnie Barron was really supposed to be Dr. John.
Now,
but I know little Joe went with him, you know, and the rest is history.
Right.
As Freddie got really good, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went back to Bourbon, and then they opened up the Playboy Club on Ivyville Street, and I got my band got a gig there. We got a year contract playing at the Playboy Club every night.
Now that was the time. So Al Boletto was
Alto
player, was the music director there, I guess.
He played upstairs in the jazz room, and downstairs was the rock room, rock and roll.
And in the jazz room, he had Angel Trosclair was the girl singer. He had Johnny Vodakovich was playing drums.
He had Paul Staley.
Oh, okay.
No, he had...
Bill Huntington was playing guitar.
Farrow. Paul Farrow.
Okay.
No, his drummer was Al Farrow.
Okay.
Al Farrow.
All right.
That was Al Boletta's first drummer, Al Farrow.
Okay.
And then when Al Farrow went to Al Hirsch Club on the corner, Al Hirsch called him to play drums because Al was terrific.
Yeah.
Man, Al used to come downstairs and watch me play, and he said, man, you got good chops and all. I said, are you kidding me? You're blowing smoke up my ass, dude. I watch you and I'm fucking amazed.
Yeah.
I'm amazed. He said, no, keep at it, dude. You're pretty good. So anyway, Al went with Al Hurt, and then
okay.
I think that's when your boy Vodakovich might have got the gig.
Okay, all right. Gotcha.
But I was leaving. I was heading out of town. I got drafted into the United States Army.
Oh, okay.
1968. They said, we need you over here to kill a few people.
68? Holy cow, that was right in the middle of the shit, man.
They said, we need you, dude. They just had a Tet Offensive. We lost about 10,000 people. We need you. I said, oh, great. Ain't this fucking great.
So you found yourself in Vietnam?
Eventually.
Oh,
so
geez.
Anyway, my bandmates, they're going to figure it all out. I say, look, dude, we got some lewds, we got all these drugs. So we're going to drug you out the day you got to go check in.
Oh, to
when you take your physical, uh-huh. You're going to be so drugged out, they're going to bomb you out.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but I said, I'm not into drugs and all, dude. So anyway, I went down to the courthouse, took my physical. I'm in line with all the brothers. It was nothing but New Orleans brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in line and I hear, hey, Wade. And I turned around, hey, remember me, dude? I said, not really. He said, man, I was the waiter at your wedding. I said, no shit. I said, what you doing, dude? And then the guy in the front says, hey, wait, how you doing, dude? You remember me? I knew everybody in line, yeah. Dude. They either worked at the club on Bourbon or, you know, they had my okay. wedding or something. Yeah, yeah.
It's all the people with no deferrals. You weren't in college anymore.
So I went. So you were married? You got married?
I was married, dude.
You have kids?
No. No kids.
But they still took you.
I had a cat, though.
Okay.
I had a cat, dude. But anyway, yeah, I went 4 years and I stopped playing drums.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when I was overseas, I'd walk down the street, you know, and they have a club playing and with a band and all. And I go and I say, dude, can I sit in? And they look at me like I'm crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd sit in with these little Filipino bands and little Japanese bands and all these little bands, you know, just to keep my chops going.
Sure, sure.
But 4 years I got out, came back to New Orleans.
Now, what you were mentioning, like you weren't into drugs, but you're talking about bands playing on Bourbon Street. Now, at that time, Bourbon Street had still a ton of Dixieland bands playing on it, right?
Oh,
a ton of great players, and I think a lot of guys that were still on dope at that time.
Yeah,
huh?
The Dukes of Dixieland were playing on the corner, and Louis Prima had his club.
Okay.
You know, with Sam Butera.
Right.
At the Show Bar, Dukes of Dixieland. The whole street was popping. Al Hurd had his club. You know, then Pete Fountain puts his club up. Then Frankie Ford with his Sea Cruise, he started a club on a side street. And then Frogman had his club, the La Strada Club.
Oh, okay.
On Bourbon Street. He played there for years, you know. But the street was a popping street, dude. With live music.
Right, 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 right.
With live music. I don't know what they got down there. I ain't been there in maybe 20 years on Bourbon.
It's a lot of classic rock cover bands nowadays.
Yeah.
From what I can tell. So you're playing at the Playboy Club, getting back to that. Now, I read something about how Don Kirshner came in and tried to recruit you for the Archies.
Yeah. So let me, if I mention the Playboy Club, I got to mention my good buddy, Ricky Castrillo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Ricky Castrillo was...
I love Ricky Castrillo.
Ricky Castrillo was guitar playing the band. And he eventually went to Tips and became the MC.
Yeah, he was.
Then he went to Rosie's and became the MC.
Right. I didn't realize he went that far back as a musician.
Yeah, yeah. He went back with me at the Playboy Club. And we had a 4-piece group. It was a great group. And Ricky's a good buddy. I wanted to mention him since you say Playboy.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I dig Ricky, man. I've tried to get Ricky on this podcast before. He lives somewhere in...
He's in Birmingham, Alabama.
Okay,
yeah,
right.
He left with Katrina and he never come back.
Yeah, he's keeping a low profile.
Yeah, he still plays music up there, I hear.
I really dig the way he plays.
He plays
really cool.
He plays little clubs and bars. He's got a following of, you know, it's good for him, dude.
Yeah.
I love Ricky, man.
Yeah, me too, me too. No, I tell you what, when you know, after Sonny Schneido went from Tipitina's to House of Blues, and at some point they cut Ricky loose from stage managing Tipitina's.
Yeah.
For the next 5-10 years I played there, it was a nightmare because bands would overplay their time.
Wasn't like organized.
They didn't have a stage manager.
Yeah,
and
wasn't organized.
It shows you that guy is earning his money, man. He was really doing something. He's really he really understood how show business works. You know, cutting them off, telling them, you know.
He's such a good personality, man. He was friends with everybody, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Leon Russell and all those cats who come through. He was really good friends with James Booker.
Yeah.
You know, and he used to tell he used to be roommates. Was it James Booker? I forgot. He was roommates with one of those characters.
Sure, sure. probably a bunch of them.
Professor Long or somebody. And he used to tell me, man, I had to take the guy to the emergency room again. I said, oh, God. Because they were heavy into dope, you know, back then.
That sounds like Booker, I'm guessing.
That was it.
Yeah, James Booker.
That was it.
Yeah, yeah.
He was roommates with that dude.
That makes sense.
And he'd always tell me, yeah, take him to the emergency room again. I said, dude, why don't you just rent a fucking ambulance and just park it at your house? And bring him in, you know.
Sure.
But, But he was he's the nicest guy I ever wanted to meet, too.
Yeah. Salt of the earth. Now, so you get out of the service, you get back to New Orleans. It's the mid-70s, early-70s kind
of? I wasn't playing music at all, and then I got a phone call from a friend, longtime friend of mine. He was playing in a band. They were having a reunion tour because they used to play in the 50s, this band. They're called the Sparks.
Okay.
S-P-A-R-K-S, the Sparks. And they won the Ted Mack Amateur Hour. Back in the day, when you were, I don't know if you were born, but they had
I've heard about it.
Ted Mack Amateur Hour used to come on TV. It was a national program. It's like the Ed Sullivan Show.
Okay.
But it was the Ted Mack Amateur Hour. So the Sparks from St. Bernard in the parish.
Right.
You know, go on Ted Mack and win the whole banana.
Okay.
They win the whole banana. So...
What, they just played an R&B song or a rock and roll song?
They wrote a song called Mary Lou.
Okay.
Mary, Mary Lou, what you gonna do? Sweet, sweet Mary, Mary Lou. You know, it's one of these old...
Yeah, I get it.
High school type deals, you know. But that thing went national. And they signed a record contract. And they went on tour all around and all that horse stuff. So when I got out to serve it, they were dead.
Yeah.
You know, they had done their thing.
Yeah.
We in the 70s, and I get a call and said, the Sparks had a reunion. You want to audition for the drumming part, you know? I said, yeah, I'll give it a shot. I said, I haven't played in a long time. So I went to where the rehearsal was. I sat on the drums, met everybody, J.V. Panier and, you know, all the guys in the band. And they played the first song, and then there was a New Orleans song, and I knocked them out. The old 45, dude, I knock them out. You name it, I'll play it.
Yeah.
You know?
Because you'd been playing all that stuff since you were a kid.
I knew that stuff, man. Like a recording. So I played the first song, and the guy says, you want to play in a band? You got a gig. I said, yeah, I'll play. So I started with them, and they went on a 1 year playing different clubs and dances and trying to stimulate, and that's how I got started back in.
You know? Okay. And you guys were traveling around the area?
It was mostly New Orleans playing. Okay.
So wait a minute. Let's go back to when you were a soldier. Did you ever go to Vietnam?
I visited Da Nang.
Okay.
Da Nang.
I was in Da Nang on my last tour.
You said you played with Japanese and Filipino bands.
That was in...
Is that in Vietnam? Or
no, that was in the Philippines.
In the Philippines.
I was in the Navy.
Right, okay.
Okay.
Now, you were stationed where? You were on a ship?
I was on a ship, and we were tied up. It was, we were a destroyer tender. We took care of the destroyers.
Oh, I got you.
We'd put new gun barrels in. We'd weld plates on the side when it took hits and all like that. Subic Bay.
Okay.
I was in Subic Bay. Subic Bay was a big U.S. military naval base with an air base. But when you went out the base, you walked over a canal.
Yeah.
Over a bridge. And they call it a shit canal.
I know about this.
It's called a shit canal. When you go over that bridge, the Marine sentries at the gate there, they won't let them people come in, but they'll let us go out. And when you walked over the bridge, you held your nose.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You walked across and you held your nose. And that whole street for like 2 miles was ballrooms. Left and right. Ballrooms as far as you could see, dude. And Subic. And, you know, so I was there.
I've heard other Navy guys talk about that very bridge.
So anyway, we left there and we had orders to head back to the U.S.
Oh,
and
good.
Then my ship captain came on to 1MC and he says, hey, man, we've been detoured. We're going over to Nam. And we did a little stench in Nam for like 6 months.
All right, but you didn't see any kind of conflict? Or?
Well, you want me to tell the whole deal, dude?
Yeah, I'm just curious.
Well, when my ship was off the coast of Da Nang, Da Nang is a harbor.
Yeah.
It's a harbor with the mountains and all. When my ship went there, they had a merchant marine ship loaded with cargo, and it blew up in front of us because the VC used to float mines on the coke cans. they'd tie a Claymore mound on a coke can and they throw them in the water, and those mounds would touch metal.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
So anyway, we getting ready to go in between the mountain ridges, and the ship blows out in front. So we back up. Captain backs his bad boy up. And then we get a jet escort across, just flying across just so we don't get attacked. That sucker sinks. They send tugboats out to pull it out the way so we could go in.
Yeah.
Okay? So the captain says, okay, everybody, take off your uniform and only go skin. Skin top. No white shirts. So we went through the pass. We went into Da Nang Harbor. And it's a big Marine base. You got an airstrip at the end there, and jets are taking off. And we tied up right there. And when we got in and tied up that night, we got a mortar round from the mountain. They start shooting mortars at the ship trying to knock us out.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, they wanted to take down this big, you know,
sure.
Repair ship, man. That was a $1 billion ship I was on.
Right.
But they took that down, so they sent a Marine detachment and put machine gun nests all around the ship and start lobbing shit into the mountain, you know. But every night that would happen.
Oh, man.
Six months.
Oh, 6 months of that?
In the daytime, you go on deck without a shirt on, you know, or if you wanted to go out there, you know. Right. And I used to,
because the white shirt would be visible from a distance.
Easy target hitting, you know. And so I used to do roving patrol on the deck. You'd have to do a roving patrol duty, you know, at night and all.
Yeah.
And my gun and all. And when I see something in the water, I shoot the piss out of it.
Yeah.
I shoot it, dude. I don't know what it is. It could be a frog man, dude. I don't know what it is.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Well, Charlie don't surf, though, I thought.
Right. Yeah, yeah. But he might scuba dive. Who knows? Yeah.
But I was sitting on the deck. I was out on the deck one time doing something, and a jet took off from the air base, and one was flying across, and it collided.
Oh, God.
Both the planes collided in the air in the bay. So we got the ring to send a boat over to get them. You know, so we dropped the boat in the water and we went and pulled the guys out and put them in black bags, and he came in.
Oh,
you had to put them in the freezer and all. It's just one after another bullshit, man.
Right. Oh, man. Well, you know, I want to go back a little bit because I was reading in your bio, you mentioned this guy. So you're talking about when you're playing with the Dead End Kids, and you mentioned this guy, Barry Rodrigue.
Yeah.
B3 player.
Yeah.
So I know Barry Rodrigue. I mean, I don't know him personally, but my father had this drummer, C.J. Sheramy, who had a trio. He was a singer, Joe Clay.
Joe
Clay was a rockabilly singer.
Yeah, the country dude, yeah.
But then he came, he's from Gretna.
He lives on the West Bank, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, I know Joe.
He's passed now. But at one time he had a trio that was him on drums and singing, CJ singing, Barry Rodrigue playing
B3
and kicking bass pedals, and this guitar player, Roger Bertrand. Do you ever know that guy, Roger Bertrand?
No.
Anyway, no. He's a right-handed guy who played left-handed Telecaster guitar, Paisley guitar, amazing guitar player. Anyway, nobody mentions Barry Rodrigue
Barry lived on the same side of the river, on the West Bank, with Clay.
Okay.
Clay was a school bus driver. He used to drive
years
the school
later.
Bus.
Years later, yeah.
But anyway, Barry and him were friends. But then Barry played with us in the Dead End Kids. He originally started with Ricky and the Tokens. When Ricky formed his first band on Bourbon Street.
Ricky Costrello
okay. formed the Ricky and the Tokens in the early days, okay? They played on Bourbon Street, and it was very popular. And then something happened where they had a little falling out or something, and Ricky was without a job, and they changed the name of the band. Paul Verisco and the Milestones.
Okay, right.
They call the band Paul Verisco and the Milestones. Paul was a singer, very good singer. He took over.
Yeah. Famous New Orleans band.
Paul had made a 45 record that was doing pretty good, but for some reason they bounced Ricky. See, but Rodrigue was playing organ with Paul Verisco. And so we get the job at the Playboy Club, and we tell Barry, look, dude, we play every night for a year. You know, the money, though.
Right.
So Barry left them for the weekend and come with us.
Sure.
So we had him on the organ.
Man, oh, man.
And the first thing Ricky says to Barry says, all right, look, we're doing Vanilla Fudge. Keep Me Hanging On. And Barry looks at him and says, what? Barry's a B3 rhythm and blues guy.
Right.
we're doing Vanilla Fudge, man.
Right,
keep,
right.
Keep me hanging on.
Was out of his depth there.
Yeah.
Well, man, you know, so now we're going to move forward. So 1993, you meet little Freddie King. You talked about this a little bit earlier in the program. You wind up putting together a band for him when he gets to New Orleans for Jazz Fest, and that's the beginning of y'all's whole tenure together.
Yeah, Freddie started out there in 1970 playing for the Jazz Fest for Quinn. And they played at Armstrong Park with the first Jazz Fest.
Nice.
And Quinn's always like Freddie, you know?
Yeah.
Because he's original.
Sure.
He's authentic. Yep. And so Freddie's played there every year. So he used to play with a guy called Percy Randolph who blew harp and played rub board and harp. And they used to do a twosome in a gazebo. But anyway, Randolph passed away and Freddie was by himself. So he asked me if I could put a band together behind him, and that's how I started with him.
Now you started hiring me last year to sub with Little Freddie's band. Now, how did you even think to hire me? I'm just curious about that.
To hire you?
Yeah.
Well, I asked around. I said, "Do y'all know any bass players that ain't worth a shit?" And they said, "Oh man, we got this guy,
there
Renee.
Is a guy."
I know the perfect guy. Yeah.
Nice. I said, "Well, he'll fit in the Freddie King band, okay, though, because we all like ain't it. Worth it."
All right. Well, I knew I've been preparing my whole life for this job. Well, I love playing trance music like you guys play. I love playing the music where that Freddie plays, where every beat is one. It's all one, 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 one. So if you have an extra one or less,
well, you don't have a one
or less than that, it's okay because it's all one. It's on the one, as James Brown used to say.
To get to your point, I call Greg Schatzi. You know Greg?
Yeah, I know.
I called Greg, sure. And I said, "Give me a list of bass players," and you were first on his list. So
oh man,
that's how I called you. Greg shout recommended
out,
you.
Shout out to Greg Schatz. What a prince, man. Okay, well now as Paul Harvey would say, we know the rest of the story. Well, man, we could talk all night like this, but it's kind of that time.
So
oh,
wait, real
yeah,
quickly,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
When is Freddie King playing?
When's he playing?
Yeah, when's he playing again? Okay, we can tell the nation because
the nation, the world, dude. We play the first and third Fridays at the DBA on Frenchman.
Okay.
And then we play the second and third or whatever at BJ's. So we work four times every Friday.
Okay.
Either DBA or BJ's. DBA, okay. BJ, and then like Renee knows, the season's coming. October's busting open. We got a lot of stuff. You know, like the New Orleans Brewery and the Crescent City Fest, and we got a lot of
barbecue
stuff.
And blues fest,
yeah.
And Freddie gets on all those things because he's so beloved, and you guys play such an authentic style of music that nobody plays around here.
I just had a guy write me to come to play for a blues fest, but it's the same time Jazz Fest.
Oh yeah,
and I don't like to leave the city. You know?
No, why would you?
A place called Crockett, Texas.
Oh, yeah.
You ever hear that, though?
No.
The guy said, "Davy Crockett Park's over here, and they got a river. We're having a festival." And I look on Google Earth.
I'd say out of Texas.
Yeah, I look on Google Earth. Where's Crockett, Texas? Dude, it's way up north. I said, "Oh, Lord, dude." But no, we turned that one down, you know?
Yeah.
Then I got a call from Florida, fly out there. I said,
"Stay out of Florida."
I said, "Baby, look, if you want to see Freddie, like, he's at BJ's on Burgundy Street, 4307 Burgundy.
Right.
They got his picture on the joint. You can come in. I'll buy you a beer."
Right on.
There you go. You heard that first, Nation.
Well, Wacko, it's been fantastic.
I appreciate you inviting me, Renee.
Yeah, it's been great.
And meeting the mayor here, the next mayor in New Orleans.
Hopefully.
It's an auspicious night.
What a treat, dude.
And let me give you a few Troubleman podcast stickers, as always. I may have given them to you before.
I'll put them on my drum, dude. Can I put them on a drum?
Oh, absolutely. And I put them on the drum, put them on your computer, your car.
All right.
There's several there.
Beautiful.
And
tell Freddie had such a good time that he should come on.
Yeah, we'd love to have Freddie on.
Yeah, I'll bring Freddie one time for you guys.
Nice. Yeah.
I'll set it up with Renee and
both of y'all. That'd be great.
I'll bring them over.
That'd be fantastic.
Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Well, as always in the Troubled Men podcast, we like to say trouble never ends.
But you know, Wacko, the struggle continues.
The trouble keeps going on, brother.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Good night.
Good night.
Train wreck. Who's that a train wreck? In your life in the night, cause speed all out of sight. Better slow down, cause it's gonna be a train wreck. Louisiana train wreck. If you don't stop, changing will put you in a new dimension. Lighten up off the gas.